Chapter 9. Willie's New Name. At 8:45 the next morning, dressed in his new clothes, Willie was standing in an alley near the station. Right on schedule, the train arrived. While the engineer and his helper filled the boiler from the water tower, the conductor placed a small step stool on the platform and helped several people from the train. The passengers hurried to the two outhouses just beyond the tracks. Willie waited until everyone else had boarded, then walked up to the conductor and handed him his ticket. Apparently, it was not uncommon for a boy Willie's age to be traveling alone. The conductor just casually glanced at the ticket and then punched it in the appropriate spot. After Willie boarded, the conductor picked up his stool, waved to the engineer, then the train started moving. As they neared a crossing just outside of town, the train's whistle let out a scream, warning any track crossers of its approach. Willie had heard that same sound yesterday about this time. Had he made it to town a little sooner, he would be a day farther west by now. The ride to St. Louis was uneventful. Willie kept to himself and did not talk to anyone. Most of the passengers seemed content just to slump in their seats and sleep, while others sat up straight and stared out the windows. Willie watched as the miles rolled by effortlessly compared to how hard his travels had been thus far. Now he drifted along on two smooth ribbons of steel, as if he was a bird soaring on high. The gentle swaying of the train car and the rhythmic clacking of its wheels made sleeping a pleasant experience. It was as if his mother was rocking him to sleep in her arms. He missed his parents and thought about them the whole trip. In weaker moments, these memories caused so much pain that his vision blurred from the potential tears welling up in his eyes. Each time he fought them back with a new surge of hatred.
"No more tears,"
he would tell himself sternly. If he was to make it on his own, his life now had no room for such weakness. Willie wondered if the sheriff was still looking for him. Big Mike would have certainly told the sheriff of Sophie's intended rendezvous with his mother. Willie had no way of knowing that while he was killing Sophie on the Willow Creek Bridge, Big Mike died trying to break up a fight in his tavern. Mike had never gotten the chance to tell anyone anything. Nor did Willie know that the sheriff had chalked up Sophie's murder as simply the result of a displeased customer and had not investigated her death further. It was common knowledge that Sophie had a nasty habit of stealing from her passed-out clients' pockets. His not being a wanted man did not change the fact that Willie had indirectly caused his mother's death. Had he not reacted to what he had heard at the tavern, perhaps none of this would have taken place. Some of what Jesse said may have been just idle boasting on his part to impress the whore. His mother said he had done the right thing, yet neither of them could have been certain that Jesse would actually have followed through with his murder threat. He absolutely had intentions of selling the farm. This fact became evident by Mr. Henderson's arrival. Yet his plan may have been to force Willie's mother to agree to the sale with just another beating. Circumstances now left Willie no choice but to make a new life somewhere beyond the reach of the authorities. The West was a big place. A man could stay hidden there for a lifetime, and that was what Willie intended to do. Getting there was his first objective. The money his mother had given him was enough to give him a good head start. He would still need to find a job. Becoming a cowboy would be his first choice, but Willie was too young for that line of work. Perhaps some rancher would hire him to do simple chores. He could start out working for his room and board, then slowly work his way up to cowboy. Willie would be 13 in 2 months, but could easily pass for a muscular 15-year-old thanks to all the hard work he had done. It was fairly common for 15-year-old boys to leave home. Some even married at that age. Since the law was probably looking for William Adam Miller, Jr., Willie needed a new name, something easy to remember. After much thought, he finally decided on Buck Adams. His new name retained part of his old one and would better fit his western destination. En route to St. Louis, a man, dressed as a cowboy, boarded the train and took the seat next to Willie. After a bit of casual chit-chat, he started telling stories about his adventures out west. Willie hung on every word. Apparently, this cowboy had come back east for his sister's wedding, but he was anxious now to get back to God's country, as he called the West. The East was too damn crowded. He preferred the wide open spaces of the West. According to him, a person could ride for days and never see the smoke of another campfire. That emptiness sounded good to Willie. This rugged-looking fellow drove large herds of longhorns from Texas to the railhead at Abilene, Kansas. This was the most dangerous of all cowboy professions. You had to be a real man to do it. William Adam Miller, Jr., fugitive farm boy, had gotten on this train, but Buck Adams, soon to be cowboy, would be getting off in St. Louis.